Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. The races for November 2020 are heating up and narrowing down. In New York's 24th congressional district, there are still three Democrats vying to challenge Republican incumbent John Katko, and they will be put before the registered Democrats in a June 23rd primary. My guest today is one of those three Democrats, Francis Knoll. Mr. Knoll has won the backing of the party organizations in Onondaga and Cayuga counties. He's an Iraq War veteran and a Navy commander in the Navy Reserves. Note that I plan to interview the other two Democratic contenders, Dana Balter and Roger Misso, in the coming weeks. Congressman Katko last appeared on the program in December, and listeners can find that interview at WRVO.org under the local programming tab. But for now and today, it's Mr. Knoll's turn. Francis, welcome to the program.
Grant, thank you so much for having me on today, and thank you for what you do for our great university here at Syracuse.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks very much. So, well, let me just get right into it and ask you, as a first question, to briefly make your case against returning John Katko to office.
Well, listen, you know, we've been on the trail now for almost a full year, and that case really is made to me quite often. There's not a day that goes by when I am not reminded of the reasons why I decided to run in this moment. And it's really a story of our home here in Central New York. It's a story of our country. And it is a story of the kind of future we want to build for our children and our grandchildren. What are our country's values? Are we standing up for those values? What are we doing to protect those values? How are we going to continue to build a future here in Central New York that is more equal, more just, more caring, and expands opportunity for everyone? And really, that story is intrinsically connected to my story growing up here and my life of service. I've spent my life serving our country and fighting for American interests and American values both at home and abroad. And the same things that drew me to that life of service drew me to run in this moment, and it's that desire to serve our country, to protect our values, and to fight for our American dream right here in Central New York, because I do believe that we are confronting threats on so many levels. Our middle and working class, the backbone of our success story here in Central New York, is under direct threat. Wages have remained stagnant. The cost of everything has gone up. We have a president who is a threat to national security. I believe he's a threat to our republic and a threat to the very soul of our country. He implements policies that hurt our hardworking families here in Central New York. And we have a congressman in John Katko who endorses the president, who invites Devin Nunes here for a $1,000 plate fundraisers. So I believe it is an urgent call for fresh leadership and bold ideas, and that is why I decided to run in this moment.
So let me break that down and get more specific about it. Which particular values, then, are the ones that you think the incumbent is not honoring and putting at threat? You mentioned the support for President Trump and the fundraiser with Congressman Nunes. We'll come back to that, but what specifically are the values that you see John Katko is not comporting with?
Well, let's first take a look at the amount of money John Katko takes from corporate PACs and special interests. Since that horrendous case of Citizens United 10 years ago, over $4 billion of corporate PAC money and special interest money has flooded into our politics. And John Katko takes a lot of it. And this money really obstructs so many of the things that were, so many of the policies that we're fighting for, everything from climate change to investing in our middle class to having access to universal, affordable health care and prescription drugs. And so take the value of investing in the middle class. Take a look at the tax bill we have in place. I do not believe that...
You wouldn't have voted for that?
I would not have voted for that, okay. No. I do not believe that Congressman Katko is doing right by the hardworking families here in Central New York by supporting a tax bill that raises taxes for a lot of New Yorkers. It puts the ACA at risk, the Affordable Care Act at risk. So there's a value, health care. Every American, every Central New Yorker should have access to affordable health care and prescription drugs. And supporting the tax bill literally put the ACA at risk. The Supreme Court announced just yesterday that it's going to take that case up and the whole Affordable Care Act at risk.
So I want to delve into a couple of those issues in a little more detail here in a few minutes, but let me ask this question first. There are three Democratic candidates in this race. It's you, it's Roger Misso, Dana Balter. You're all on record as supporting President Trump's impeachment. As you just pointed out, you're all on record for opposing the tax cut that was passed in 2017. So in terms of specific policy positions, what most distinguishes you from the other two candidates, other two Democratic candidates that are vying for the primary spot?
Well, listen, I will tell you that I am running on a policy platform that is progressive and pragmatic, and one that I think that we can unify Central New Yorkers behind. It tackles the rising cost of health care and prescription drugs.
Well, let me stop because I want to be specific here.
Yeah.
What's the difference, though, between you and the other two Democratic contenders? Give me specific policy issues where you have this position and Dana Balter or Roger Misso have that position.
Well, I think that what we've seen now, we've done over 20 candidate forums, is that you know, we're all Democrats and that there is a good degree of policy alignment.
Okay.
I will say that I'm the only candidate who supports a Medicare for all option. So not forcing people off of their health care. I think
Medicare
that
for all if you want it.
Medicare for all if you want it.
Okay,
and I think that health care, the cost of health care is a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we can get there and we can control costs by having a public option in place.
Okay. I want to explore that in a little more detail in a minute. Let me ask you another question here. You mentioned the Nunes fundraiser.
Sure.
As a critical point about the incumbent. Give me an example of a Democrat right now who would hold public office, let's say the congressional level, where you would not want to participate in a fundraiser that Democrat was willing to put on for you. Because you're suggesting that the congressman should have drawn a line between himself and this other person in his party. So give me an example of where you would draw a line between yourself and someone in the Democratic Party.
Well, I will tell you this. We have raised the lion's share of our money here in New York. We've done it with all individual contributions. I haven't taken a dime of corporate PAC money. We're not bringing these people into town to host $1,000 plate fundraisers. So the thought hasn't even occurred to me of who I would or who I wouldn't yet. I know we're working very hard to raise the money to take on John Katko, and we're doing it with all individual contributions.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Francis Knoll. He's a candidate for the Democratic nomination to challenge incumbent Congressman John Katko in New York's 24th congressional district. All right, so let's get back to health care. It's obviously a huge issue, and you brought it up. You, as you said there, with supporting Medicare for all for those who want it, that you, if I understand your policy positions as I've read them, you basically support various ways, short of a single-payer system, of trying to move more people into health insurance. What I didn't see very much of was what you would do to try to bend the cost curve there, because that arguably is an equal challenge to getting more people insured. So how would you address rising costs?
Yeah, sure. I think that to start, what we need to do is look at ways that we can contain the costs of the Affordable Care Act. And I think that one of the first steps we could take would be by increasing the value of the tax credits that hardworking families receive who are on the Affordable Care Act. Another way that I think that will continue to exert downward pressure on costs is by continuing to look at ways to increase enrollment for the Affordable Care Act. And then finally, I think that when Central New Yorkers and Americans have the option to buy in to a public plan, to a Medicare for All-like plan, that having that lower cost option will continue to lower cost of health care for everyone.
So how is it that putting more people into Obamacare is going to lower costs? You make that, trace that connection out for me.
Well, the connection is that now you have younger, healthier people paying into the Affordable Care Act. And that's a key point that you need to continue to support the overall structure of the plan. So increasing enrollment is something that helps benefit the entire body and the entire population.
So you also said, and it's in your literature as well online, that you want to rebuild the middle class. What does that phrase mean?
Well, I think that it means investing in key things that will support the middle class. And so things like investing in education, making sure that we have great schools, particularly in some of our underserved areas. It means continuing to invest in our career and technical educational programs and our vocational programs. Right now in Central New York, we have a skills gap. We have 15,000 job openings. And if we are going to truly prepare our communities and our workers for this economy of the 21st century, we need to continue to invest in the skills of our workers so that they can take advantage of these jobs. It means investing in infrastructure, right, that will put people to work, particularly infrastructure that's focused on these clean energy jobs, because I truly believe that we can invest in sustainable energy and green energy and create jobs and protect our planet. And so there are ways that we can invest directly in our middle and working class. And I'll tell you how you don't do it is you don't do it by just putting all the money to the top and doing supply side economics, trickle down economics, what we have going on right now with the tax plan in place, which sure, it benefits the stock market. But does it really benefit the hardworking families here in Central New York, the majority of which are living paycheck to paycheck?
So I want to push a little harder on this notion of what the middle class is, because it seems to me it arguably one of the most amorphous terms politically in the last 20 years. Where's the boundary in your mind between the upper class and the middle class? Where does someone in the middle class start becoming in the upper class? How do we know it?
Well, I mean, I think that they have, income bracket definitions.
Sure.
I think we have a median income here in this district of around 50,000. Mm-hmm. And, there are actual income levels. And, but I also know that there are so many families that are really struggling here mm-hmm. in Central New York, families that are working two and three jobs, people who are getting home from work and driving Uber. Just to make ends meet. All the while, the cost of everything continues to go up. The cost of healthcare continues to go up. The cost of higher education goes up. So one of the things that has been resoundingly clear over the past almost year that I've been on the campaign trail is that the middle class squeeze is real, and people are facing real challenges. And although we hear about this great economy and this performance of the stock market, it doesn't always translate to what we're seeing on our streets, in our towns, in our villages, in the city of Syracuse.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Francis Canole. He's a candidate for Congress in New York's 24th district, and he's looking to be the Democratic nominee to challenge incumbent John Katko this November. You mentioned investing in clean energy and in infrastructure before
sure.
the break.
Sure.
So let me mine that a little bit. First of all, do you have an idea of how much public investment you think we need to make in those things? Because numbers do get bandied about. Can you give our listeners some target of what sounds right to you?
I don't have an exact number right now. What I do know is the cost of not taking action will almost certainly outsize the cost of the action that we need to take.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we know that we are facing an existential crisis. 99 out of 100 scientists tell us such. And at the same time, we really need to take an all-hands-on-deck, multi-pronged approach to this. We need to, right now, the grid is supplied by about 37% renewables. We need to get that up to 100%. We need to meet the goals set by the Paris Climate Accord. And again, you asked me about values. Well, here's another value, protecting our planet, right? And look at what this administration is doing. They left the Paris Climate, announced that we're going to depart from the Paris Climate Accords. So in order to get there, in order to meet those goals of the Paris Climate Accords, we're really going to need to do a lot of things. We're going to need to invest in wind, solar, and bio. We're going to need to update our grid. We're going to need to update our buildings. We're going to need to look at how we do farming. We're going to need to invest in this carbon capture technology. We're going to need to invest in sustainable transportation. And so, yes, there's going to be a cost, but the cost of doing nothing will outsize the cost of staying on of remaining on course here. And at the same time, what I keep saying is that there's going to be an economic benefit for Central New Yorkers. Investing in clean energy, saving our planet, and economic growth are not mutually exclusive. I believe they're going to be intrinsically connected. And so investing in this, I think, is going to be a real source of good paying jobs here in Central New York. So it's a good news story all around, and we're doing the right thing. We're going to protect our planet. We're going to protect our lakes. You see in Skinny Atlas Lake and Owasco Lake, the green algae that's growing, this affects our water. So we've got a real problem here, and we need to take action on it.
Are there specific votes or actions that the incumbent Congressman Katko took when it came to either infrastructure or clean energy and the environment that you would take issue with?
Well, look, the Congressman Katko right now has a 27% approval rating from the League of Conservation Voters. He also takes a lot of money from the fossil fuel industry. And so when you look at the amount of money he takes and you wonder nationwide why we're not seeing more expedient action on climate change legislation, I think you just need to follow the money.
So let me ask you a question about guns now and gun policy. You have called for reinstituting the federal assault weapons ban from 1994.
Right.
Now, New York already has the SAFE Act, and that has an assault weapons ban, and it's one that's quite a bit stricter than that 1994 federal ban was. Yet, in the state of New York, there are still legal New York State compliant AR-15s that in terms of lethality have really all the functions of an assault rifle. So what would restructuring or resurrecting this ban actually accomplish?
Well, listen, I just think nationwide and here in New York, we need to get these assault weapons off our streets. I don't think hunters need them. You know, these are weapons that we design.
Well, let me jump in again, because my point here is that if we think about New York and you have this federal assault weapons ban, it's going to do zero in changing the policy about guns in New York, because New York already has a stricter ban in place. So, you know, what and you, as I said before, you have these totally New York compliant AR-15s that functionally are just the same. So I what are you accomplishing?
Well, I think it's a matter of it's both here in New York and it's accomplishing it for our entire country. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that these tragedies that we see this past December was the 7-year anniversary of Sandy Hook. And I think that we are facing these tragedies all across the country. And again, I still think there's, you know, certain people have abilities to bring in weapons into New York, and just having these weapons on our streets anywhere. Mm-hmm. I think we need a federal assault mm-hmm. weapons ban across the entire United States. There's no place for them.
And the federal assault weapons ban in 1994 had a grandfather clause in it. So if the owner of that weapon had the rifle prior to the ban, then that was okay. Would the new ban that you would want to put into place have the same grandfathering clause to it? We have a lot of assault weapons already out there.
Well, you know, I think that we need to continue to work to get the ones that are out there also off the streets.
And so would that mean banning them and have a turn-in policy?
It's something I would look at, mm-hmm. but I haven't, you know, right now I want to start with the assault weapons ban, and then we'll look at ways we can get the ones that are out there off the street.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Francis Knoll, a candidate for Congress in New York's 24th District. Let me ask you another question about other Democrats. On what issues do you disagree with Speaker Nancy Pelosi?
Well, I mean, listen, right now, I'm really focusing on the issues that affect Central New Yorkers. and I'm letting the speaker do her job as speaker and focusing on our race here in Central New York.
So I got to repeat the question, though. Can you give me one issue on which you would take a different position from Speaker Nancy Pelosi?
Well, again, look, I'm focused on our race here in Central New York. And so healthcare, jobs, investing in education, protecting our climate, protecting our citizens from gun violence, these are the issues that Central New Yorkers are talking to me about. And I am letting Speaker Pelosi focus on her job as Speaker.
Okay, I'm going to take that as a no. Let me get to some more political questions now. Dana Balter, one of the people in the race, she ran against Congressman Katko previously. Fair to say, I think she did better than expected in that race, and there was a blue wave 2 years ago. That was the congressman's closest race so far, and even he said on election night that, boy, he hoped he didn't run against her again, that she wouldn't challenge him again. So why should the Democrats trade horses now, given what happened in the previous race?
Well, listen, I have been truly honored to have received the support of a unified coalition of Democrats, over 20 elected and formerly elected officials. I've received the designation and endorsement of not only Onondaga County, but Cayuga County. I have a labor union endorsement. And I believe that I've been endorsed and supported by such a large group and a growing group of Democrats because they believe I'm the best candidate to take on John Katko. They believe I'm someone who's going to fight for our hardworking families here in Central New York, who's going to fight for health care, who's going to fight to protect our planet, and who's going to fight to transition our economy to a 21st century economy that can really support our working class. And that's the reason why I decided to run. Because I think that we have a real urgency in our moment right here.
So pushing a little bit further on that, in the primary that you're going to be running in, Dana Balter is going to have the support of the Indivisible Movement, which was quite effective in the previous election cycle, particularly at the primary stage. And there is a lot of volunteers and activist grassroots organizations that are affiliated with that group in different ways, and she will have that support. 2 years ago, that created an electoral tidal wave in the primary in which she beat a more moderate candidate that was inserted into the process by the party by 20 points. So you, I think, are positioning yourself as a more moderate candidate than Dana Balter, at least on health care, you are. You can correct me on that if I'm wrong. But my question here is, how are you going to try to appeal to that core constituency and bring them on board?
Well, I will tell you that we are fighting for a very bold progressive agenda. Just today, Representative Gallego, who is the vice chair of the Progressive Caucus, announced that he's endorsing me and our campaign for Congress because of our bold, progressive, and pragmatic platform of really fighting for our hardworking families here in Central New York and investing in education, protecting our planet, investing, protecting women's rights, and protecting the rights of our LGBT community. So many bold progressive issues that we are talking about and that we are fighting for. And I am so proud to be a champion of our progressive movement.
So I want to give you a chance now. We're getting near the end of the interview. We got about two minutes left or so for you to talk more about yourself. You mentioned some things about your bio when we first started talking, so I want to come back to that. You have a very impressive military resume. One of the political issues, though, that's come up here in this district, and it goes back, at least in my memory, to 2006, is how thoroughly connected to the district the candidates are. And so my understanding is you grew up in Syracuse. You're a Syracusan. So as an adult, how long have you lived in Syracuse after you went off to the Naval Academy?
Well, so I was born and raised here. I come from a family that's lived here for generations. You know, we've served in the community for a very long time. My mother is a teacher. My grandmother was a teacher in the Syracuse City School District for 30 years. My grandfather Patrick Corbett was the former sheriff of Onondaga County and the only Democrat ever elected. And after West Hill, I wanted to find a way to serve myself. And for me, that was through the military, and I set my sights on the Naval Academy. I graduated in May 2001, and that was seemed like a relatively calm time in the world. And then 3 months later, we were attacked on 9/11, and things became very busy. I deployed shortly thereafter to the Middle East. I deployed multiple times over to the Middle East. I served on the ground with Army Special Forces in Iraq. And I was very fortunate to be able to serve at the tactical, operational, and strategic level of our military. I was privileged to serve on President Obama's Armed Forces Inaugural Committee. I had the privilege of serving in our intelligence community, and I had the privilege of serving most recently as a policy advisor to two secretaries of defense. I was able to get two master's degrees, with the GI Bill. And so, I had a phenomenal career in the military, and really learned leadership and how to bring people together. And I made the decision to return home last year.
Last year, okay.
And, as I said, that the same things that called me to this life of service called me to serve right now and run for Congress.
So it's an obvious question. I have to ask it because others will be asking it. Did you come back to run for Congress?
I made the decision to come back. I had decided a long time ago that after my tour at the Pentagon, I was going to return home. This has been my home for generations.
And what are you doing now? What is your occupation now? That's not clear from your website.
So right now, I've remained active in the Navy Reserves.
Okay.
And I'm a commander in the Navy Reserves, and I command a unit that is out of the Bronx.
Okay.
And so I go down to New York City once a weekend, and that is my other line of effort in life.
Well, certainly running for Congress is a full-time job in itself.
It absolutely is.
That was Francis Canole, and again, the primary election is June 23rd. Francis, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you so much, Grant. It was wonderful.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Associate producers include Sarah Forland and Zane Aga. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit us online at wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations or download the show as a podcast from iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.